In early June, a group of 25 university students visited the state of Alabama on what is now an annual multi-day civil rights learning experience led by Dr. Lavelle Hendricks and funded by generous alumni Rosalie and Frank Turner of Birmingham. The trip takes students through Birmingham, Selma, and Montgomery, and through the lives of many of the people who participated in the American Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. That's coming up, but first, new gun-related legislation in Texas has universities across the state paying close attention and spooling up to comply when the law takes effect next year. We'll visit with Sergeant Kyle Lowe of the A&M Commerce University Police Department about the text of the law and what it'll mean from a campus safety perspective. This is The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. Hello, Dr. Jones.
Hey, Jared.
So, what campus
about,
carry.
What about campus carry?
Campus
huh?
carry.
Yeah.
It's on everybody's mind.
It has been on everybody's mind. Gosh, it seems like it's been forever on everybody's mind. And for as long as I can remember, it's been a topic of discussion in just about every legislative session that I've been following. And this session was different in the sense that an actual piece of legislation came out of it, Senate Bill 11. And Senate Bill 11 is the campus carry law. And so it goes into effect August 1st, 2016, a little more than a year from now. That's good news because there are some very important things that this university and all institutions of higher education in the state of Texas will be doing during the next, 13 months mm-hmm. or so to ensure not only that we come into full compliance with the law, but that we do so in a manner that protects and safeguards the security of the campus and every member of the campus community.
Like what?
Well, there's just a lot of things, and some of them are spelled out pretty clearly in the legislation, and in other respects, we're getting some guidance from the university system. So, and as I mentioned, the University Police Department is going to play a key role in helping us through this process, and we're very fortunate to have with us today Detective Sergeant Kyle Lowe to talk about some of the things they're working on. So, Detective Lowe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm doing okay this morning.
Doing great.
As far as University Police Department's role in this, as you can imagine, we were looking at this from the very beginning. It's almost passed a couple of legislative sessions prior to this. So when this came about, Senate Bill 11 did pass. We have started preparing, first of all, by preparing our officers. As you can imagine, we're getting plenty of questions from the public on what we can, what we can't. We are finding a little bit of the public's trouble trying to differentiate between the open carry and the campus concealed carry.
They're two separate issues.
Two separate bills absolutely. Completely. And so that's what we start out with by telling them, look, they're two separate bills. And then we also tell them that remember, the campus carry bill is for people with a concealed handgun license because some are under the impression that you don't have to have a license, that you can just carry concealed. So we were starting to go through these steps. So as long as we can educate our officers first, get this down, because I don't know if you've looked at the bill or not, the bill is 10 plus pages long, just this bill. The open carry is 40 plus pages long.
Right.
But if we can get them down on the campus carry bill and they can see what will take effect, what will not take effect, what the exceptions are, what the provisions are going to be, then they can better answer the public's questions. And then once we get our officers in line, then we can take and start educating the public a little bit better, maybe through some courses or something like that. That we would, I'm sure, feel free to offer to the public for any questions they might have for it.
That conflation that can happen, my mind goes back to these YouTube videos of enthusiasts who are walking into restaurants and public places like this, brandishing assault rifles
right,
like.
Right.
That's not something that's expected to happen.
No, this will be a concealed carry, and not only is it concealed carry, it's concealed carry for handgun only. It's not going to allow you to take and bring your rifle or your shotgun in or anything like that. And it will require you as concealed, it's going to have to be covered in some type of holster on your person. And there are ways, there are penalties if you take and display that handgun in front of another person. It's a Class A misdemeanor in the state of Texas. Or with the actual premises that will be designated no carry zones, even mm-hmm. if you have your concealed handgun license, that will also be a Class A misdemeanor in the state of Texas if you carry a handgun on that particular piece of property.
And I think it's important to note here, Jared, that we will be designating gun-free zones. It is inconsistent with the letter as well as the intent of the legislation to designate the entire university as a gun-free zone.
Right.
I was asked that question by various faculty members, and university CEOs, boards of regents do not have that authority. But we can and we will be making a case for specific locations and or events where concealed handguns will not be permitted.
It sounds like this campus, though, is already spooling up on sort of the intricacies.
Yes.
And it sounds like, you know, with 13 months to worry about this, things can very well be in order by the time that the law takes effect.
Well, and as Detective Lowe mentioned, this didn't sneak up on us. You know, this has been under consideration for many, many years. So there's been a lot of attention paid to this, not only by us, by our UPD, by our concerned faculty and students and staff, but by universities across the state. So we're not starting fresh on this. You know, we've already had lots and lots of conversations, lots and lots of ideas have been floated. So the time has come now to put all those things into effect.
And the key is educating the public on what has and what has not gone into effect.
So let me just reiterate by saying the safety and security of every member of our university community is the guiding principle here. Everything we do has to be consistent with that goal. And again, that's the process that will be unfolding beginning September 1st this year.
Sergeant Lowe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Shifting gears now, we mentioned this at the top of the show, and I was off by the numbers. It was actually a group of 33 university students who visited the state of Alabama on a multi-day civil rights learning experience just this past month. And here's some students, some of the things that they had to say.
I believe that the young people are being distracted by, you know, different stuff, as in, you know, music, television. They're not more into it like our ancestors was, and this is downfall, because you see it nowadays in Baltimore, you know, riots, so like they don't know how to protest, don't know how to march, so therefore they need to actually come together and ask their grandparents about it, because their parents would even know about it. They have to ask their grandparents about it, their great grandparents about it, and learn how can we do it the right way and do it non-violently, which got us to the point that we are today.
On the tour bus, they played the movie Selma, and on the scene, I saw the four little girls in the church, and it didn't click what scene they were trying to portray until the bomb went off and all you saw was smoke and fire. And to know that those little girls could have been talking about anything, could have been talking about hair, could have been talking about dolls, and then in an instant their life was taken away from them, that was sad to see. And I teared up when I saw that scene in the movie, and this is the place where it happened, and I'm here today.
A lot of people have no idea of the actual history here in Selma, and so I told a lot of people who actually never heard about Selma, who actually never came on the trip, I encourage them to come to the trip and enroll in the class, so I know they'll gain a big experience in it.
That was Charles Woods, Danielle Schenkel, and Dorian Baker, all students who attended the trip to Alabama this past month.
Well, and they couldn't have said it any better than I can. These students had an amazing experience. This is the third year now that we've been able to sponsor this program. As you mentioned at the top of the show, both the dream and the funding came from one of our alums, Frank Turner, a 1961 graduate of Old ET, had a very successful career in the railroad industry, and his wife, Rosalie, who has written a number of books on the civil rights movement, history and sort of the cultural context of it. They have been instrumental, not just in helping pay for the trip, but also in arranging the various stops on the tour, arranging speakers. I went on the first trip, I missed the second year, and then went again this year. And again, it was an amazing experience for me, and I thought I knew everything, but it turns out that I don't. One of the high points of the trip for me this year was to hear from Doug Jones, who was Alabama prosecuting attorney, who prosecuted the last and convicted the last two bombers in 2001 and 2002, nearly 40 years after the event. He was able to go back and win convictions against these two bombers.
Right.
And what an amazing story that was. But again, it was an incredible experience for everyone who was there. Dr. Lavelle Hendricks has been instrumental in helping coordinate and lead the trip from the beginning. And we're fortunate to have him with us here today. Dr. Hendricks.
Good morning, Mr. President. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
One of the great things about the program is that the cross-discipline of students who are attending, whether they're majoring in education, the sciences, arts. I mean, we have 33 students coming from completely across campus. This program happens because of the support that the university provides. You have the president's office involved in it, the alumni association involved in it. And as President Jones mentioned, Frank Turner, who has been very supportive of this program. So it's a win-win. The program has grown Jared, again, we had 33 students this year. And
why take the students to Alabama? Can't we read about this history in books? Don't we have the internet now?
I think there's two answers to that question, Jared. One is the obvious one, and that is, yeah, you can read about it in a book. But as the young lady said on earlier you had the audio of, it's one thing to read about it or even see it reenacted in a movie, but to stand on the very steps in the very room of the 16th Street Baptist Church where these four young girls died and hear the story told from people who remember it is just a transformational experience. And it's no longer just a history lesson. It becomes a part of life. But the other reason, and I think this is even more compelling, is much of this history still remains unwritten. And to hear Doug Jones tell the story of how he won the convictions of these two bombers. Now, he does have a book coming up. He wanted to make sure that we knew that so that we'd all be watching for it.
Yeah, we're going to use that book next year in the class, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But in addition to him, we heard from Myrna Jackson. She's spoken each year. She was one of the foot soldiers. Well, we went to Marion, Alabama, which was, you don't read about that much in the history books because it hadn't been written about much in the history books. But it was really where the voting rights movement that culminated in the march from Selma to Montgomery, it's where that movement began in Marion, Alabama, with the murder of Jimmie Lee Jackson. And we heard from some of the participants in those initial protests, some of those foot soldiers, in kind of a stuffy room at a catfish restaurant.
That's right.
But no one noticed, the environment because the stories were so compelling. So, yeah, and this history is fleeting. And for these students to hear things, this is stuff you can't get out of the history books.
I think, Jared, it's also important to point out one of my students that is old enough and should be registered to vote but wasn't at the time, told me that when he got back that he wanted to go back home and he wanted to register to vote because he heard the price that was paid for individuals to have the right to vote. And he sent me a message and showed me his voter registration card. So he got a lot out of that. But secondly, more importantly, just to see how the students now wanting to get involved, wanting to make a difference. One of the individuals, Danielle, that you heard earlier, made a point that she said when she comes back to campus in the fall semester, she's going to make sure that students get involved, make sure that students are registered to vote, to make sure students understand it's about them now, because the past is the past, but they represent the future.
I'd like to, and along that line, the students sent me emails after the trip, and I've saved all of them. This one is from a young lady named Chandria Hurd. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to learn more about the things others have done to make sure I have a better life, such as giving me the right to sit wherever I please, eat at any restaurant, go to any school, and to vote. The trip was amazing, and I learned a lot. Thank you. These are fundamental rights that no one should take for granted. Mm-hmm. And these students learned that these rights must be exercised or they go away. And to hear, from both from their own lips, as we did earlier, and then in the emails that I received, this trip changed the course of these students' journey through life in fundamental and compelling ways.
Dr. Hendricks, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
And the story of that event and others, we're proud to tell them here on The President's Perspective, but this program and other programs like it, they don't just happen. Right now is KETR's Summer One-Day Drive. If you appreciate these stories, if you appreciate this program and other programs that you hear on KETR, please consider going to KETR.org right now and clicking that donate button and making a contribution to great public radio here in Northeast Texas right now.
That's right, Jared. The Civil Rights Tour exists because of the generosity of one of our alumni, and others have jumped on board. This radio station exists because of the generosity of our community supporters throughout Northeast Texas. So today's a very, very important day within the life of this university and the life of this radio station.
KETR.org. Click donate. It's that simple. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Hendricks and Sergeant Lowe. Thank you so much. And Dr. Jones, I appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure, Jared.
The President's Perspective is produced at 88.9 KETR's studio facility in historic Binion Hall on the campus of Texas A&M University Commerce. Find archives of this and other programs online at KETR.org. While you're there, don't hesitate to click the donate button at the top of the page to show your financial support for this kind of informative, entertaining, commercial-free radio that you hear on 88.9. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.